right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass Podcast. My name is Rick Butler. Joined to my left, that is Ryan Shumper. Where are we? We're in Dayton, Ohio. On the way. Where are we going? My brain is fried. We're going to Detroit, Michigan. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. I still know where we're going, so I think I might be in a little bit better.
You might be a little better.
But it's a hectic time. It's quick turnaround from getting back to Charlotte, doing a load of laundry, getting everything packed back up. Luckily for us, Tennessee plays on Friday night instead of Thursday. So that gave us, you know, one extra day, but still a quick turnaround. And all eyes kind of turned to the Motor City and the Midwest regional semifinals. And for Tennessee's sake, hopefully the finals this weekend.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I feel like all I've done since I've gotten home from Charlotte is football press conferences, laundry, sleep. Then we were back right on the road. So a lot of stuff going on right now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Throw in a couple basketball press conferences, a baseball game, and yeah, just a lot of recycling things and getting ready to roll again. But that's the nature of March Madness. And all eyes turned now to the Creighton Blue Jays.
All roads lead to Detroit. Okay, two quick things on baseball because you mentioned it. Super, super quick. One, I told you a couple weeks ago that Billy Amick was going to be a pretty good player.
Yeah.
I'd like to also now say the same thing about Ariel Antigua. I'm not sure if you know this or Jack especially knows this. I'm sure you guys do, but I think he's going to be pretty good. I don't know if we'll see it a lot this season. I'll defer to you, I guess, on that. But I think he's going to be pretty good. So buy some stock now if I were you.
Yeah, well, we'll get to see at least some this weekend, you know, with Billy Amick expected to be out again this weekend. So Dean Carley will slide over to third base. And Ariel Antigua at a shortstop. We'll have baseball talk with Jack and I at the back half of this pod. And we talked all about Antigua's, already recorded all about Antigua's impressive debut on Tuesday against Tennessee Tech, and just what things will kind of look like for Tennessee this weekend against Georgia with Billy Amick expected to be out of the lineup again.
Yeah, if you're new to the program, I say all that facetiously. Ryan and Jack are the best on the baseball beat. And again, at the end of this recording right here, which will probably go about 20 minutes or so, who knows, you can hear Jack and Ryan talk about the Tennessee baseball season. So make sure to stick around for that. But otherwise, we're going to be getting a little bit of a basketball preview here. Let's rewind to last weekend real quick. In Charlotte, North Carolina, 2-seed Tennessee defeats 15-seed St. Peter's on Thursday. And then they turn around in a high-profile matchup that, I don't know if you saw the ratings, but it certainly got a lot of eyes on the weekend. Tennessee beats 7-seed Texas to advance to a second straight Sweet 16. Tennessee will now take on 3-seed Creighton coming up Friday night at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. If things go well, right? It could even be later if something goes into overtime.
It'll probably be 10:15 at least, if I had to guess.
So I don't know what your routine is to stay up late. Maybe you got to take a nap, maybe do some late night coffee, but whatever it is, figure it out, I'd say.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I would think nap. It's just so, so late. I think you have so much time to get a nap in after work on Friday, whether that be, you know, whatever, 5:30 or 8:30. You're going to have a ton of time to be able to get some rest before. But yeah, it's going to be a late, late night game. It'll be the last game of the Sweet 16 round, with obviously four games on Thursday night and then three games before it. The one starts, I think, just maybe 20, 30 minutes before it on Friday night.
Yeah, certainly a lot going on. Make sure to stay up late. You know, I don't really, you know, who knows, for all we care, go ahead and just skip work on Friday. I mean, it won't impact us at all, so skip work, take a nap, get ready for the game, and then you got to stay up late for the RTI coverage as well, because that's going to be coming late night, so you might as well just pull an all-nighter, not go to work the day before. Let's talk about Friday night. Actually, before we do that, Ryan, just going back to last weekend, Tennessee was not one of the most impressive teams coming out of that first weekend. I want to say I was looking at an offensive efficiency chart, maybe adjusted. I wish I could give better numbers and statistics. I apologize, but Tennessee was at the bottom of that list. So obviously, Tennessee did not stack up necessarily too well against their other Sweet 16 companions. But what were just some of your takeaways coming out of that weekend? Tennessee gets a massive win over St. Peter's to kind of break that two-game losing streak they had going into the tournament. But then a really close fought, dirty, in the muck, not a pretty game against Texas. Just sort of your final thoughts coming out of that weekend.
I don't think it necessarily changes a whole lot, just the fact that, you know, it's a game that Tennessee and just about anybody is going to lose when they play or when they shoot especially from 3-point range, the way they did against Texas. And they found a way to win. They did it with good defense, good rebounding. You know, got enough going at the basket, and really, you know, hit some timely shots down the stretch. I mean, a couple. I think they ended the game on a game where they shot 23, I think, maybe 25 3-point range. They made 2 of their final 4. Obviously, those were big. And then just the 6 free throws they hit in the last, I don't know, 45 seconds, minute of the game, all in the bonus situation to go 6 for 6. They hit some shots late to help seal the game. But obviously, I think everybody knows that if Tennessee wants to get past this one, get past Creighton, they're going to have to shoot at least a good bit better, if not, you know, considerably better than they did against the Longhorns.
Yeah, maybe if this was earlier in the regular season, maybe if this was January basketball or so, then we might still talk about the takeaways from, you know, playing a poor game like this. But at this point in the season, man, it's just about surviving and advancing, right? It's just about getting to that next game. And obviously, as we've been talking about, Tennessee's got a tough matchup in 3-seed Creighton. I think most of the people that I've talked to, there's a little bit of a split here in what they picked in their own brackets. I think a lot of people certainly have Tennessee losing to Purdue in the next round. I don't know. We kind of go back and forth about this being a tough matchup for Tennessee. Tennessee maybe having some advantages in some places. Just let's first start out with where maybe the challenge is going to come in this game for Tennessee when they take on the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I'll start on, you know, defensive end for Tennessee, which is just the fact that Creighton's got 3 really, really high-end scorers. Baylor Shireman, Trey Alexander, and Ryan Kalkbrenner all average over 17 points per game. Baylor Shireman's, you know, one of the best players in the country. Consistent scorer, can do a lot of different things. He's been doing it for multiple years for them. It's a veteran team. Trey Alexander's kind of had more of a breakout year. Shireman's like a 6'7 wing, I'd imagine you'll see. Josiah Jordan-James start the game on him. Maybe Jemiah Meshack defend him some too, depending on, you know, how he gets going. Trey Alexander, 6'4", so a guy that I think you'll see probably Santiago Vescovi on to start the game, potentially some Jemiah Meshack as well. So you talk about those two guys, and then Kalkbrenner in the middle being the 7'1" guy. I don't think he maybe poses the same issue. I mean, I guess he does pose the same issue that a lot of the big men that have given Tennessee problems this year have, just from the fact that he's a good low post scorer. But he's not, you know, he's not as physical. He's not as, a lot of those guys Tennessee's faced, especially in the SEC, when you look at Jani Broom and Tolu Smith, are real big, physical, strong guys. He's more of kind of wiry, lanky guy like Jonas Adu, probably a little bit bigger in the upper body, but nothing crazy. So that's kind of where it starts on the defensive end for Tennessee. It's controlling those guys. They're Creighton's point guard, Stephen Ashworth, also averages 11 points per game. Besides that, no one averages more than 6 points, and it's really a team that's going to play six guys most of the game, and then they have a 7th man that'll come out. Isaac Trott, a big man, will play 10 minutes a game, you know, not a ton. So that's where it is on that end. On the other end, it's kind of a unique defense and a good defensive team, and just from the fact that it starts with that big guy in the middle, Ryan Kalkbrenner. He's a 3-time Big East Defensive Player of the Year, probably the best rim protector in the country. Honestly, Tennessee might see the 2 best this weekend if they can get past Creighton, because I'd say Zach Edey's probably right up there next to him. So an incredibly challenging matchup, and you know, Creighton does a lot of the same things similar to Alabama, really on both ends of the court. But they run opponents off the 3-point line, and they play a lot of drop coverage with Kalkbrenner kind of just playing a zone in the paint. So they force teams to shoot a lot of mid-range jumpers. They don't foul a lot. So certainly a game where Tennessee's going to have to shoot the ball well and, you know, maybe look for what Zakai Ziegler and Dalton Knecht particularly can do in the mid-range.
Yeah.
Zakai with those floaters, Dalton getting to the elbow. To me, I'll talk about it maybe more in a second, what Dalton could do against, you know, as a ball screen, pick-and-roll ball handler, I think could be really fascinating in this game. But that's kind of the, I was going to say quick glance, so I wasn't really quick. I kind of rambled a little bit. But that's the all, you know, kind of overarching look at some of the things that Creighton does well and will be a challenge for Tennessee.
Yeah. So on Shireman. I'm going to throw the R in there frequently.
It's a tough one.
But on Shireman, you're right. He's averaging 18.3 points per game. He's shooting 44.9% from the floor. In comparison, Dalton Knecht is 21.1 points per game, 46.1% from the floor. So both of those stats fairly even if you want to get a comparison. But the other thing is that he's also their leading rebounder at 9.1 per game. So he's basically a guy that's averaging a double-double through the season. And that just shows to me how, you know, we've seen how important rebounding is for Tennessee basketball and being able to get those second chance points. They've been good at that, especially a guy like Tobey Awaka, I thought was good in that first weekend, getting on the glass, being aggressive, being a force down low. And I think that just kind of goes to one of Tennessee's keys of the game is continue that aggression down low. I think we've really been able to see the parallels between when Tennessee is not able to get off to a good start, between when they are able to get off to a good start, no matter what they do for a 20-minute stretch at a time, they're best when they're aggressive and they're physical. I think that Tennessee can be that team in this game. And then the other thing is just kind of on that same point, Kalkbrenner. Again, I feel like we sound like a broken record. We've talked about it, the players and the coaching staff have talked about it, but that first 4 minutes, right, that's where the tone gets set for the game. I remember going back to that that St. Peter's game. I believe Jonas Adu had like 13 points in the first 10 minutes, so obviously he was pretty good in that first four as well. You saw in the second game how he was missing a little bit in the paint. He was missing at the rim. I believe he missed his first three shots or so, made one before that first media timeout. But that start of the game is just so important. I definitely think that Tennessee is going to try to continue to go in low. I think they're going to try to get Jonas Hott to start that game. But between Shireman pulling down 10 rebounds a game, between what Kalkbrenner, 7'1", can do, it's going to be an interesting battle in the paint. But then, of course, you got those good guards that you talked about as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think with Jonas, he kind of tells you what he's going to be for the game usually pretty early on. Like, he seems like you feel whether he has it or not on that certain night. And, you know, I think it's going to be really tough for him to score a lot in this game. But, you know, I think it is a matchup that sets up for him to hold his own on the defensive end, which I think is going to be really important. And, you know, Creighton's kind of an interesting team when you look at them on, you know, KenPom. They got a lot of bright red and a lot of bright green. So a lot of things they do really well or things that they really struggle.
Okay.
They don't do much offensive rebounding. They're fantastic on the defense glass. Not a lot of teams get second chance opportunities against them. And a lot of that, you know, they camp out Kalkbrenner in the paint, play that drop coverage. He's right around the rim. Obviously, Shireman's a really good rebounder as well. So, I think maybe the thing that I would point to from, because Tennessee's been good this year, they're really good taking care of the ball, they force a lot of turnovers, they're good on the offensive glass, they've been shaky on the defensive glass, but, you know, what comes with that is talking about stealing extra possessions. I think where you point to for Tennessee in this game to steal extra possessions would be if they can force some turnovers. Creighton does not force turnovers at all, one of the very worst teams in the country, and they're good at taking care of the ball. Like, I don't want to say that they're not, but they're not, like, elite at taking care of the ball. And there have been some games where they've gotten turnover happy this year. So can Tennessee's ball pressure give some of those Creighton guards some issues, and Tennessee can really win the turnover battle? That's maybe an area I would point to in this game where it's not like they're definitively going to have an advantage, but they could potentially, kind of exploit. Again, I'm not even sure I'd call it a limitation for Creighton, but an area they're just not as stout in and kind of get a bunch of extra shots.
Josiah Jordan-James, looking back at his game log, scores 0 points against Mississippi State in that loss in the SEC tournament, scores 0 points in the win over St. Peter's, not that Tennessee necessarily needed extra offense in that game. But then came out and scored 9 points with 9 rebounds against Texas. I felt like he was a difference maker. We talked in excess, right, about how valuable he is to the team on the defensive front. A lot of people have said that, the coaches, the players, whoever else. But I really thought that him being able to add those 9 points in, that was really beneficial for Tennessee. And you look at the different ways he had that one basket that was the reverse under the basket. I thought that was just a very typical Josiah Jordan-James play. Sometimes he'll pull up for that mid-range, sometimes goes to the basket, but I liked seeing the aggression from him there, and I think that's good for Tennessee. But then being able to have the poise to hit that three-pointer at the end of the game, I thought that was great. And I believe he didn't talk in the press conference after that game.
I think he did. I mean, I'm not sure.
No, you're right. He did because he answered the question about Zakai. So I remember after that press conference, you could tell that there was some confidence in the step, and not that I'm implying that he lost after those last two games, but it was an effective Josiah Jordan-James that we saw.
Yeah, no doubt, and he's one I'll be curious, because, you know, I mentioned that Creighton gives up a lot of mid-range jump shots. Obviously, Josiah Jordan-James is a guy that's good in the mid-range. I'm curious as to, you know, if that really carries over, because typically the mid-range jump shots Creighton gives up are a lot in ball screens. Josiah's not a pick-and-roll ball handler, so I'm curious to see what that looks like. I do think if Tennessee uses Josiah Jordan-James as kind of a pick-and-pop screener, I think he can get some open shots. That's usually another way you can really attack drop coverage pretty effectively. He's going to be a big guy, and I think, you know, I teased it a minute ago. One area that I'm really looking at in this game that is going to be fascinating is Dalton connect in, you know, as a pick and roll ball handler in this game, because what Creighton does so staunchly in their ball screen defense is that drop coverage where Kalkbrenner, you know, if his guy's the screener, he sits in the paint, they chase over top the screen, and that just leaves it, you got someone defending the basket, you're taking away, you're not going under the screen, you're taking away the three-pointer, and that leaves that mid-range jump shot open. We know Dalton connect's really good at that. We know he's really good at that elbow jumper.
He likes it.
And you talk about the last 6 weeks, anybody who's playing ball screen coverage against Dalton connect is at bare minimum an extremely hard hedging ball screen defense against him, if not just straight up doubling him. We've seen a number of teams double him off these ball screens. So what kind of, you know, can Dalton connect force Creighton's hand to switch up their ball screen defense by being so effective in the mid-range in this game, or just by hurting them in general, you know, coming off pick and roll actions? To me, that's going to be something that's really fascinating, because again, we haven't seen anybody in a long time defend Dalton connect off of ball screens the way Creighton will in this game. If they do what they've done all season, then you would think they would, because they've been effective at it, and it's kind of their bread and butter defensively.
Yeah, that's a great point, and I think that is a not necessarily a stat. What is that? Just a nugget. That's a really good nugget going into that game tomorrow. Obviously, you know how important Dalton connect is just to Tennessee's overall scoring, but it's interesting the way that Tennessee sets him up each game to get those scoring opportunities. And with everything that you said right there, it looks like that he's certainly going to have a few to be able to score. Tennessee loves to run him in that mid-range, especially coming from the wing. So interested to see how all that works together. Let's see. Who have we missed? What have we missed?
You know, I don't know if there's necessarily anything huge at this point that we've missed. You know, I think when you talk about Zakai Ziegler's another guy that, can he get into the middle of the floor? Can he penetrate and hit shots? You know, hit that floater, which, you know, he uses some, not necessarily a ton. I think the other thing I'd say on the pause, we've talked about a lot about the challenges that Creighton presents. You know, one thing that maybe is a good matchup is just the way Creighton, you know, maybe a little bit of a finesse team. I think you can go finesse and soft can run together. I don't think they're a soft team, but they are a little bit of a finesse team. They don't play a ton of guys. They don't have a ton of depth. And that's been, you know, a weakness for them. We've seen in some games where teams play really good defense against them. They're really, really physical. That's given them issues. That's how their season ended in the Elite Eight last year. They lost to San Diego State 55-50, who's a very defensive-minded team. They scored 48 points in a loss against Colorado State. You know, Providence, who's obviously Kim English, is a Rick Barnes disciple. They beat him twice this year. And one of those games was really high scoring, and I can't remember who it was for Providence, but they had somebody really go off in that game. Connecticut beat him 62-48. So they've had the propensity to look bad offensively against physical, tough-nosed defensive teams. And I think you, outside of making shots for Tennessee, like how does Tennessee win? If, you know, if they don't make shots, I think that's something that you would point to of a possibility for how they could get it done if they, you know, they don't play really well offensively, which honestly, I mean, Tennessee hasn't played really well offensively in what feels like a long time, at least since the Auburn game, and even that game, it was largely Dalton connect scoring 39 points.
Yeah, I think that makes all the sense in the world. Do you think, I'll give you some over-unders just to run through, okay? How about, there was one on the top of my head that was just really good. Dalton connect over under 20 points.
I feel like we're turning into don't tell Charlie Baker. This has become a gambling podcast. So you're not, I can confirm Rick's not looking at the odds. He doesn't have
He
does not have it up. So we're not getting Charlie Baker, we're not giving betting advice, we're not giving prop bets. I'll say over, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I think he's gonna have a lot of opportunities in this game. And it kind of feels like he's due for a big game. And heck, the last two games that weren't big games, he still scored 18 points in. So it wasn't like he was too far off. I'll say over.
Does this present a good game for Zakai Ziegler assist numbers? And I say that knowing that he is a phenomenal distributor with the ball and that he's always going to kind of be in that, you know, 7 to 10 range or so. But you're talking about that drop back defense that Creighton has. Does that give room for opportunity for guys to slash the basket and find a guy there, or maybe a pick and pop or something like that? What do you think assist numbers could look like?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not really sure. A lot of that, I think, will depend on how Tennessee shoots, because it doesn't present itself to a bunch of dump-offs and dunks for Jonas Adu or a bunch of cutters off of it. You can get some pick-and-pop, you know, opportunities if Tennessee were to run that, where you could get assists there. You could, if he makes, you know, create hits some shots into mid-range, Creighton could, you know, have to play some help defense off the wings, and that could present opportunities for him to kind of get in the middle of the court and spray it outside to shooters. But again, you know, you talk about pick and pop, you talk about that getting in the middle and spraying it out to shooters. That, you know, in a large part becomes dependent on Tennessee hitting some shots from the perimeter. So I don't necessarily think it sets up for a huge assist game, but like you said, at the start, you know, Zakai's a guy that's going to get guys a bunch of, you know, he's going to distribute the ball, and certainly if Tennessee hits shots, I think it's, you know, very capable that he could have a bunch of assists in this game.
10:09 p.m. Eastern time from Detroit, Michigan's Little Caesars Arena. Do you think there'll be Little Caesars as a menu option for us?
That's a good question. Probably not, but maybe. I don't know. It could be.
How do you feel about Little Caesars?
I can't say I eat it a ton. It's fine. I mean, I'm not going to be...
I had it a lot in college.
I'm not going to hate on it a bunch. Yeah. One more thing on the game I will say.
Okay.
Because Greg... You know, someone that kind of stood out looking at the numbers, and Greg Polinski, and I think maybe even Sakai said it a little bit today too. Some similarities in Alabama and Creighton, just from the fact that they are both heavy three-point teams, heavy at the rim teams. Creighton gets 39.9% of its points from three-point range. That is 11th in the country. So a very heavy three-point shooting team. They don't really do a ton to get to the free throw line. They don't really do a ton in the two-point range. They score a lot on three-pointers. And Kalkbrenner can shoot them a little bit, not a ton of three-point attempts on the season, but some. And then I think it's really probably more dramatic on the other end. 63.1% of opponents' points come from two-point range against Creighton. That is the number one mark in the entire country. And then 336 come from the three-point line. 25.1 come from three-point line, which ranks 336 nationally. And then 362 out of 362 on free throws. No one really gets to the free throw line against this Creighton team, which is important. Not something you're going to bank on, but at the same time, a team that's as thin as Creighton, if you can get a guy or two in foul trouble, that could really change the dynamic of the game. And it's not something they've had to deal with a ton this year. So some similarities there. I personally think Creighton's a better team. They have certainly have more options on the offensive end, and Alabama has nobody defensively in the middle like Kalkbrenner, but some similarities in how the two teams play. I would also say Alabama plays a little bit faster. Creighton doesn't look to push as much in transition, but again, that's, if you're going to compare the way Creighton plays to an SEC team, that would be Alabama, and certainly Tennessee's had some success against Alabama this season.
There you go. Tennessee, a 2.5-point favorite over Creighton, according to ESPN Bet. Now, Charlie Baker, that is a real line, but we're not going to give any advice to it. Just letting you know, Tennessee, a 2.5-point favorite. Again, ESPN Bet has the over-under at 144.5, and we will go on from there. All right, that about wraps it up for us here on our Sweet 16 preview coverage. Now, stay tuned. Jack and Ryan are right around the corner with a little bit of Tennessee baseball talk.
All right, shifting gears to baseball talk now, some Tennessee baseball talk. Let me introduce myself. Obviously, Jack Foster here in the second half of this Rocket Up Insider Press Pass podcast. Ryan's, you know, going to talk some baseball with us too. Tennessee is 22-4 after their midweek win against Tennessee Tech. It was an 11-1 run rule victory. That means that Tennessee has had a run rule win in three of their last four games, and the other game was a loss. So their last three wins have all been via the run rule. Ryan, some are calling last night's win over Tennessee Tech the biggest win of the season, considering the losing streak the Vols had against the Golden Eagles. Do you share that sentiment?
I'm not sure I quite share that sentiment, but I definitely think it maybe meant more than just a normal midweek game with kind of getting that monkey off their back. Tennessee Tech's had their number the last few years, and we were talking about it in the press box before the game last night, that it was like that Tennessee Tech game last year was really the low point in the season, right when they came back from Arkansas and really got beat pretty handedly in that game. I can't remember exactly what the final score was, but
12-5.
Yeah, it wasn't very competitive. So certainly, and that was, again, I think maybe after the fourth SEC series, that was a couple weeks later in the year, but definitely Tennessee in a much better spot as it exits Tennessee Tech midweek game than they were last year. And a good kind of stepping stone into the weekend where you saw a number of guys kind of in new opportunities or new spots, and it really felt like all of them played pretty well.
Tennessee Tech, the only opponent that the Vols played in both 22 and 23 that they did not beat. So wow. Every opponent that they would have played in both years, they at least beat them one time. Like they get swept by Kentucky in 22. Well, they took 2 of 3 in Knoxville last year. you know, and really in 22, that was the only SEC series they got swept in. So they at least beat every other SEC team.
They didn't get swept in that series, by the way. I've seen other people say this too. They won game three.
They did win game three?
Yes. Cortland Lawson hit a big home run to right field in like the 7th or 8th inning that gave him the lead. It was a competitive game, but they lost the first two, then won game three.
Yeah, because I was talking to someone who I won't name, but he was talking about how Tennessee got swept. It honestly reminded me last night, because I may have gotten it wrong, honestly. If you asked me, did Kentucky sweep Tennessee in 22? I may have said yes, but that brought it to the forefront of mind last night. So, you know, but interesting. Okay, so
that's funny because I've seen other people say that too. Tennessee got swept by Kentucky in 2022, and you saying it kind of gave me like a pause. Like maybe I'm misremembering, but I remember them winning that third game.
Well, anyway, moving forward against Tennessee Tech, Ryan, it was the first game the Vols played without Billy Amick, as he is dealing with an appendix injury. He will be out for the Georgia series. Tony Vitello said that it's not a reality. He plays this weekend, but you know, there's optimism he'll be good to go next weekend. So this is the first time we've seen a lineup without Billy Amick. First time we've seen Ariel Antigua get a start in shortstop. Dean Curley slides over to third. What do you think is the biggest takeaway? I feel like it's probably Ariel, though, from Billy being out of the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it's just how good, at least in the game last night, how good Ariel was defensively. No one's ever had a better debut where they hit 0-3 in a game. I mean, you don't even think about the fact that he, you know, wasn't great at the plate in that game because he was just so good defensively. 9 assists, tied the single game program record for Tennessee. It was a 7-inning game. I mean, it did feel like the ball was just kind of classic baseball stuff. The ball was finding him a ton last night. He made a couple really impressive plays. And, you know, even the one play wasn't necessarily his fault, but doesn't go right, as he puts a pretty good throw over to first base with Ethan Payne. And Payne, I don't know if it got past him or he dropped it or what exactly happened. You know, the runner takes off for second, they throw it in, and the runner slides past the base, and Antigua's just there with, you know, holding the tag on the entire time to get the out. So he was just super polished, and, you know, I couldn't help but like in what he said after the game, where he's talking about, you know, the comfort level of being able to play with Dean Curley beside him, since those guys have worked a ton together, since they're both true freshman shortstops. And he said, yeah, it's kind of a glimpse into the future. And yeah, I think that will be a glimpse, and that will be Tennessee's shortstop third base combo for the next couple of years once Billy Amick moves on to professional baseball.
So had Ethan Payne not muffed that throw, would Ariel have broken the single game record?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Interesting. But yeah, I agree. I think you put it well when you said you can't have a much better debut when you go for 3 at the plate, because he was fantastic defensively. And you can just tell it's really natural. And that's been, you know, the word on him this whole time is just he is a natural shortstop, and just everything just goes so smoothly when he's there. So we'll see what happens when Billy comes back. I think, you know, with what Dean's given you so far this season, it'd be hard to, you know, take him out of the starting lineup. But do you think there's a scenario where maybe there's just some rotation with the two and they split playing time, even in SEC play at shortstop when Billy's back?
Yeah, I think there's probably a scenario where they split some playing time. And I mean, I think we've seen that to some extent in the outfield too, where, you know, we kind of talked about it, and I think we felt like what Tennessee's best three options plus the DH were, or at least maybe one or two combos that were your best, but they have continued to rotate, and they've gotten Reese Chapman some starts in there, and certainly Dalton Bargo being limited, at least not being able to play the field, and he didn't base run last weekend, did he? I know he pinched hit, but they pinch ran for him. Yeah, so maybe he gets back to doing that this weekend. That simplifies it, but you've seen them continue to show their depth in SEC play. So I think if, you know, you get through a stretch where Dean Curley is not hitting great, and certainly he's been a little bit streaky at the plate, I think it's possible you'll see Ariel Antigua get some starts there in SEC play. And look, he's going to get 3 opportunities this weekend with Billy Amick out. So what he does this weekend and how effective he can be could influence how much he kind of forces Tony Vitello to give him more opportunities. But yeah, I don't think it's likely that he necessarily just completely overtakes Dean Curley and he becomes that full-time starting shortstop. But for him to get some starts and to get some chances, I don't think is far-fetched at all.
Another change we saw from Tennessee last night with Amick out is a change in the order. Christian Moore has been leading off for Tennessee for the past, you know, couple, I would probably say 15 to 20 games. I mean, he's been the leadoff guy pretty much the entire season. That changed last night. He moves down to the three hole, occupying the spot that Billy Amick did. And then we had Robin Villeneuve leading off, which I thought was interesting because Villeneuve leads the team in strikeouts. And, you know, he has probably, 20 less ABs than whoever is second on the list. I believe it was Dylan Dreiling entering last night. So, you know, he strikes out a lot, but when he doesn't strike out, he's getting on base. You know, he's shown the ability to get on base at a high rate this year. Obviously, we know he has a lot of power. He's a guy that just has that presence that Tony Vitello admires for a leadoff hitter. What did you think of Robin leading off? And, I mean, he had a good night to back it up.
Yeah, no, he certainly had a good night with three singles. And, yeah, I know this was a popular conversation in the press box on Sunday when I was not there. So, you know, obviously I get a little bit of hindsight bias. But to me, I kind of like it, or it makes sense at least, just because Tennessee doesn't have a true leadoff guy. So if you're moving Christian Moore out of it, who probably fits that mold the best, I just like the idea of having someone who works really competitive at bats, gets on base a lot, whether that be walks, getting the singles like he did last night. Obviously the big difference is the strikeouts. But again, the guy that he's continued to, or I've continued to see some similarities with, is Jared Dickey, just in the working competitive at bats, having some power, but being a consistent contact hitter. Again, Dickey didn't really strike out, so there's a difference there. And obviously they used Dickey as the leadoff guy in 22 some while he was healthy. So I like it. You kind of take the strikeouts with it. And I think that, you know, potentially, or I guess I would just say, I don't think the strikeouts is something that Tony Vitello worries about a ton. I mean, look, Mauro Iannone was Tennessee's leadoff man all last year, and he led the team in strikeouts too. So when you just don't have a natural guy, I think it makes some sense. I still think when Amick comes back, it's probably going to be Christian Moore. So I don't know if this conversation is going to matter a ton in the long term. But, you know, when you talk about a temporary replacement, I kind of like it. You kind of know what he's going to give you up there.
It is difficult to mind it after hitting three singles last night, yeah. Before, as Robin did. So if he struck out three times, maybe we're having a different conversation, but he did really well. And it's, you know, I think you have to be fine with it based off what he showed you last night moving into this weekend. And you know, it's really not the biggest deal in the world. Tony kind of said it after the game, as in, you know, that the order really only matters one time. After that, it's just all jumbled together. So Robin's one of your 5-6 best hitters. Having him in the top 5-6, whether it's leadoff down in the 5-6 hole, you know he's going to produce, and like he has all season. Moving on to the outfield, you mentioned it a little earlier. We've seen some consistent rotation out there continue on as the season has progressed. Hunter Ensley, not an everyday start, really the only two. Kavaris Steers and Dylan Dreiling. Dreiling, I suppose, had the night off last night against Tennessee Tech, but Hunter Ensley, Reese Chapman, Dalton Bargo, who's dealing with a hamstring. As you said, not going to be in the field probably still for this series. We'll see what happens moving forward. But I think the big story here is that Reese Chapman's bat is finally coming around, and he looks like he can be a real threat for Tennessee at the plate from what he's shown against Ole Miss last weekend. Obviously, he had a huge night against Tennessee Tech. He had a huge day against Illinois when they, you know, blasted them 24-1 on that day. I believe he had 6 RBIs that day, maybe more. But Reese Chapman's bat is here, and he's definitely earned himself some important playing time in the SEC play.
Yeah, I think that's a huge development in some ways, which feels, you know, the talent's certainly there. It always has been there, and it just hasn't felt like he's really been able to truly get comfortable. And for him, obviously the Ole Miss game is more important, what you do in conference play, and that was, you know, really exciting. I was surprised to see him not get another start the rest of the weekend. Obviously, Hunter Ensley started on Saturday and had a good game himself at the plate, so maybe it was just kind of going with the hand you know a little bit more. So obviously the Tennessee Tech game, again, it's Tennessee Tech, doesn't mean a ton, but you just like the fact that he followed up his next time out with another good performance, because you go back to Illinois and he was really good in that Saturday game. He started again on Sunday, and then he gets pulled for having a lackadaisical play in the outfield, you know, in the middle of the game. So building that consistency, building those reps, I think is big. And, you know, it continues to give Tennessee a lot of options in the outfield, which I think can be, I mean, it's always important. It's more important right now because Dalton Bargo is not going to be playing in the outfield, at least for, you know, the immediate future. So it gives Tennessee more options. It gives Chapman's, despite that lackadaisical play in the outfield, he is a really good corner outfield option, a good option in right field. And I think obviously Hunter Ensley is a better option in center field than Kafaris Tears, but Tears has showed that he can play center field. And it's kind of a way that you can balance that out a little bit, I guess, if you want to go Tears in center, and you might lose a little defense there, but you can, I think, gain some defense by playing Chapman in right field, or at least he's just one of Tennessee's better defensive options in the outfield. So it gives Tony Vitello and Josh Elander a lot of flexibility, which they've kind of already had in the outfield, but it's just good to see another guy, especially a talented guy, kind of starting to take some steps forward and look like he could be a real contributor for this Tennessee team.
Hitting .393 on 28 at-bats, also 19 RBI on the season, is Chapman. He's appeared in 17 games, has started 8. I expect him to continue to rack up some starts as we move along in the season. You mentioned Hunter Ensley starting on the Sunday. I think that this is the reason he started on Sunday is the biggest check for Ensley against his outfield competition, and that is he's a gamer. Like, it's a rubber match. Tony's going to want the guys who will come to play, who will come through in big moments. I think Hunter Ensley's that guy. We saw it last year in Clemson, right? I mean, he had the RBI that gave Tennessee the win or to go ahead to go up. So I just think Hunter Ensley's a gamer. He's obviously not one of the best hitters on the team, but he's a leader. He's a, you know, great locker room guy. And I think when push comes to shove and big games like that, we're going to see Ensley get the nod more times than not.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, unless they're just their hands just forced in another direction of other guys just being so good or being so hot at the plate. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's a trust level with the staff, and I think that's certainly a very much earned trust level with how consistent and solid, and like you said, gamer. I mean, he showed up into big games last year for Tennessee. He was one of the guys, and certainly this lineup's a lot better than last year's. We've talked about that all season, but he was one of the guys you trusted most. You wanted up in a big spot in the game last year. And I think that carries over, and I think you see that in the field. I mean, how many times have you heard Tony Vitello talk about why Hunter Ensley became their starting center fielder last year? It was they were looking for a guy that wasn't afraid of the wall. And that's just kind of the way he plays, and I think you see that kind of carry over on the plate. And there's certainly just a comfortability, I think, with putting Hunter Ensley in a spot in a big game.
Blake Burke hit his 39th career home run against Tennessee Tech to bring his career total. Oh, I just said it, 39. Don't need to double up there, Ryan. But
ninth
of the season, 39th of his career. He's one behind Luke Lipsius for the program record. Christian Moore now at 37 career homers, so he's just two behind Burke. I'm going to put you on the spot here. When all is said and done at the end of the season, who is Tennessee's home run king?
Oh, that is a tough one. I mean, I'll go Burke. They've both been really, really good at the plate so far this season. So it's not like it makes you just go with the guy who's in the lead. I guess I say that to say. And really, if anything, I think Burke's probably been better than Christian Moore, at least in SEC play. I think Burke's probably been Tennessee's best hitter through these first two weekends. So yeah, I'll roll with Burke, but it's probably going to be really fun to watch throughout the season because I imagine it stays, you know, relatively competitive.
Yeah. I think it'll be Burke too, but and Christian Moore does for what it's worth too. I think Eric Kane asked him about it, you know, just the home run record, both of them being so close, and he was like, "Yeah, Blake's gonna win it." You know, he just has a little bit, he just hits long balls at a little bit more of a frequent rate than I do. Blake Burke 14 doubles on the season. That's leading the SEC. He's hitting .391 at the plate. It is a complete turnaround from what happened last year, right? It was. You know, he was hitting home runs still, but he was striking out a lot, didn't have a lot of great ABs in SEC play. I know it's only two weekends, but, you know, you just kind of mentioned it. Blake Burke has been Tennessee's best hitter so far, definitely in conference play. And if we're talking about, I know Blake Burke's not a leadoff hitter, and he's probably not going to ever lead off for Tennessee, but his stats are profiling that way. He's just been so consistent. He's got the home runs. He's got the doubles. He gets on base. I believe it's a 24-game streak right now of getting on base for Burke and a 15-game hit streak. So
I believe so.
He's just playing really good baseball right now.
Yeah, I mean, the SEC stuff. I mean, he's hitting .417 in SEC, three doubles, has a home run, three walks, three strikeouts. Like, just the consistency, the approach. He's just a guy that you feel like is going to come through in a big moment when he's up in one and up with runners on in scoring position, runners on base. And obviously the ceiling has been high, you know, and even last year when he struggled, when things went well, it seems like things went really well for him, but the floor has just been raised so, so considerably. And he's just been incredibly, incredibly consistent. And, you know, Kavaris Tiers is another guy too that has hit the ground running in SEC play, has been one of Tennessee's best bats. And you know, he's probably the one you'd have the most questions with just because he hasn't had to do it as a full-time starter before. So when you pair that with Amick and Moore, who obviously you had a ton of trust in, it's Tennessee's top four in that lineup, I think, is as good as everyone thought it would be and everyone kind of hoped it would be. Obviously, it's different than projecting it and it going out there, and that group's just been really, really good. And it feels like when those guys come up for the order, Tennessee is going to have a great chance to score a run, you know, just about every time.
When you look at the players that have been the consistent stars for Tennessee this season, Burke is last in strikeouts. So,
yeah, that's crazy.
He has the least amount of strikeouts of any of the, you know, consistent starters on Tennessee. So Burke has been great this season. We'll see if he can keep going. Let's move to the pitching staff, Ryan. A lot of notes to talk about here, but the biggest one is that A.J. Russell was pulled in Saturday night's game against Ole Miss in the ninth inning after giving up a couple walks, an RBI double that tied the game. He had some forearm stiffness, and it doesn't seem like A.J. Russell is going to be back for at least a couple of weeks. We know Tony Vitello likes to play things conservative anyway, but considering this is now the second time this season that Russell has dealt with an injury of some sort, you know, you don't obviously want to rush him back in this scenario, and Tennessee's going to be without one of their best pitchers for a while, it seems.
Yeah, it's a really bad development for Tennessee, and you're right. I think, you know, already they wouldn't have rushed it back, but the fact that it's a second injury, and now this one's being forearm, which, you know, maybe a little bit more serious or a little bit more worrisome for a pitcher as opposed to a side injury. So, yeah, it's not going to be rushed back. Tony Vitello, he didn't exactly say that, but he kind of had a, I wouldn't expect to see him anytime soon vibe when he talked to us last night. So it's a huge loss for Tennessee. I mean, we've talked about it, just how much they needed him to get back, to have a third starter that you feel consistently can eat a bunch of outs and get you at least in the middle of the game, if not get you pretty deep into the game. They need that because their bullpen's so thin and there's so many questions about their bullpen. And now that's him being out, it's just going to, you know, shine a light on a lot of those issues or a lot of those shortcomings. And it's about being able to find some guys to give you some consistency at that spot week in and week out.
Yes. And Russell's injury also, it makes what AJ Kazi has done this season so much more significant.
Yeah,
like truly. The fact that AJ Kazi is as good as he has been for Tennessee and that he is super reliable Friday night guy right now, it doesn't totally wash away what the bad that the Russell injury brings, but man, it makes it a lot more manageable to move forward considering you have a Friday night guy that, you know, is going to be just great from what he's shown you so far.
Yeah, no, it just makes you think, man, what trouble would they be in if AJ Kazi hadn't been this type of dude trying to piece things together? I mean, you'd be really, really reliant on Drew Beam getting deep into games every single week. So, yeah, you know, it's been huge. You know, the thing I would point to is the key maybe for Tennessee to get through this and to build this depth. Maybe this isn't, you know, an insane thought or anything we haven't talked about all year, but to me, it's just those young guys. It's the two freshmen and Matthew Dallas and Derek Schaefer, and then Marcus Phillips, who's obviously a JUCO guy, but young too and new to the program and highly talented. Those are the guys that have the high ceiling. Those are the guys that have the stuff that in SEC play, you feel like they could maybe give you a little bit longer outings, maybe compared to some of these bullpen arms that Tennessee trusts right now. And certainly none of them have really gotten a ton of opportunities in SEC play. And I wouldn't, you know, I'm not sure I'd say they've earned them either, but they might have to get them now just out of necessity. And I guess the positive side of that would be all three of those guys pitched last night and were pretty good. And again, as you'd always say, it's Tennessee Tech. It's not the end of the world. It's not the biggest thing. Yes, those guys have also walked a lot of people in games against competition like Tennessee Tech this year. None of them did that last night. I thought Schaefer was really, really sharp. Two strikeouts in a 1-2-3 inning. Dallas was a 1-2-3 inning as well. I think Phillips gave up a leadoff single, but then retired to side after that. So good. As Tennessee needs at least one or two of those guys to step up, good start for them last night against the Golden Eagles.
Yeah, I think the most optimal path for Tennessee would be that one of those freshmen steps up so much that they can start on Sundays and give you 3 to 4 innings before Nate Snead takes over, because Tennessee wants to keep Nate Snead in the bullpen at all costs. If there was a time that Nate Snead was going to start a game, it was Sunday against Ole Miss. Big game, rubber match, Combs through already. They were pretty much out of options. Where do they go? Back to Xander Seacrest. He did do well getting 7 outs for them. But if there was a game Nate Snead was going to start, it was that one, and he didn't. So Tennessee is going to keep him in the bullpen at all costs, I feel like. So I think the most optimal path for Tennessee, as I said, is for one of those freshmen to step up to where they can start. But obviously, that doesn't seem like it's going to be reality this weekend. Would you expect Xander Seacrest to start again on Sunday?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you'd say him or Aaron Combs, because those are the two guys we've seen kind of serve in that Sunday opener role. And I think Xander's probably been better in it, and you probably like what Combs can give you out of the bullpen on a Friday or Saturday morning. You like what Xander can. So I would say that's my expectation for what we'll see this weekend.
I really think Xander only has to give them 6 outs. Like, if he gives them 6 outs and allows 1 run or 0 runs, that is what you want out of Xander Seacrest in SEC play, in my opinion, because Nate Snead has been so good, and we've seen him be able to go a long time. So if you can just eat 2 innings, I think that'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the goal, and we talked about it off air, maybe it was yesterday. It's hard not to get greedy, though, of wanting to get a couple more outs for Snead if you can, because, you know, Snead's not going to go to distance for you much if he, you know, he's got to get 7 innings, 21 outs. And he might not even if he gets to through 3 innings, but at least that bridges, he's able to bridge it more, and you need less on the back end. I mean, 5's kind of the number I'd point to of innings you feel like you're probably going to get from Snead. It's at least typically been in that ballpark. So you're right, 2 innings is what you target for Seacrest. If he does that, and like you said, give up 1, no runs, maybe even 2 runs, you're like, all right, that's a fine or a good outing. But I don't necessarily think it's going to be 2, and no matter what, pull him. I think you might see them be aggressive, especially if he can be, you know, face 7 guys or something like that in the first 2 innings, and then he can just get you through the lineup the first time. I think that might even be a more fitting thing to point to, is can he get you through the lineup the first time, and then the second time when he circles it back around, go to the bullpen.
Yeah, that's a good point. Other arms in the bullpen, you know, obviously Kirby Cannell has his role. Chris Stamos, he has been a little shaky, but I would expect more innings to come his way, just, you know, given the kind of pitcher he is and being a lefty. I feel like he's going to get more innings as the season goes on in SEC play, but we've talked about him a lot. Andrew Binkie has been pretty good. Didn't get a lot of action last weekend, but I think he's going to be among the most reliable bullpen arms for Tennessee. With this Russell absence, who do you think needs to step up the most in Tennessee's bullpen? Probably, obviously, Nate Snead is going to be the guy on Sunday out of the pen, but looking at those Friday and Saturday games, who do you think needs to step up coming out of the pen?
I don't necessarily think I point to one guy. Like, it's just, you need a collection of these guys to be able to be a little bit better for you. I'd maybe say Stamos or Kirby, just because they're veterans and maybe you feel like those are the guys who can do it for you. I think Combs needs to be better than he's been. He's been, to me, not consistent enough in his outings, and he's a guy that's talented and I think is a true bullpen arm. So to me, there's not necessarily just one guy you'd point to. It's kind of the veterans, the guys that have done it before, just them finding a little bit more consistency and maybe being able to give you 2 innings instead of 1 or something like that.
Tennessee's back in Lindsey Nelson Stadium this weekend against the Georgia Bulldogs. Georgia got swept to open SEC play against Kentucky before sweeping Alabama last week. They were back in Athens, and they swept Bama last week. Got swept by Kentucky in Lexington on the road. As fun fact, every SEC team that was on the road in opening weekend for conference play lost their series. That's how tough it is to win on the road in the SEC. But Georgia, the big thing with Georgia is Charlie Condon. He is an absolute machine. Yeah. He's, you know, considering what he's done so far, he's on pace to win SEC Player of the Year. He is among the best players in the country. And, you know, he's probably going to give Tennessee some fits this weekend. But, you know, more than that, Georgia's going to be a tough series to win for Tennessee. What do you expect to see from the Vols this weekend, Ryan? And kind of where do you see the series going?
Yeah, I mean, I think Charlie Connens 1-1, at least at this point in the draft this summer, is to me the best hitter in the country, if not the best player in the country. And, you know, I think this is a series Tennessee needs to win. They need to be able to take care of business at home. Certainly, this is a good Georgia team. A team Georgia team is going to compete to make the NCAA tournament, but it's not upper echelon in the SEC either. So you need to win this series at home. And I'd say what I'm expecting is a lot of runs. This is a Georgia pitching staff that's struggled this season. A Tennessee pitching staff, we just got done talking about all the depth issues that they currently have at the moment. Two teams that are, I believe, Georgia's first nationally in home runs, and Tennessee's second, playing at a smaller ballpark as it's going to start to warm up. I expect a lot of offense and probably some exciting games at Lindsey Nelson Stadium.
I said before the Ole Miss series, given the fact that Ole Miss and Georgia were, just kind of as you put it, Georgia, I think Ole Miss is similar in that, you know, they're not top half SEC teams. Georgia may be on the fringe of that, but, you know, they're not the LSUs, the Floridas, the Arkansas. They're not close. I said Tennessee probably should have aimed for 5 wins in these two series. I think they should have swept Ole Miss based on the talent gap that we frankly saw in the two wins. They just dropped Saturday's game, and I think that's a game they obviously love to have back, having the lead in the 9th inning and all. But do you think that 5 should have been the goal for Tennessee? That would require a sweep this weekend, you know, with these two series, or do you think 4 is fine?
I think it's kind of both. I think 5 should have been the goal. That should have been what you should have strived to do. But I think 4 is fine too. I mean, you're winning series. I don't think you can really complain about it a ton in SEC play, unless you're playing the very, very bottom of the league at home. You know, then it might be a little disappointing if you don't get a sweep. So 5, I think, is what they should have. You know, that should have been the goal. They should have been striving for that. But if you get 4, I don't think there's any shame in that. And that sets you up in a fine position as you head into the Auburn series on the road next weekend.
Obviously, AJ Kazi will start on Friday night. And that game time is going to be, I believe, at 6 p.m. Eastern time, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, excuse me, on Friday night. And then that game is on SEC Network Plus. Saturday and Sunday's games are on the SEC Network. Saturday's game at 5 p.m. Eastern, Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern on Easter. So Friday night, you got the double dose, right, Ryan? You got baseball at 6:30 and then basketball at 10. So I'll get to watch both. I'm excited about that. I'm glad.
Yeah, no, the basketball game's so late that it works. It really is kind of a true doubleheader. Everybody will be able to watch both games. So should be exciting stuff.
You heading to Detroit today?
Heading to Detroit today? Yep. As we go into Dayton today, so making a little over half the drive today, and we'll make the rest tomorrow.
All right, cool. Well, everybody, be sure and follow along with Rocket Top Insider all weekend long, as it's going to be a big weekend for Tennessee baseball and basketball. Of course, follow Ryan Shumpert at rshump00. That's S-C-H-U-M-P. Follow me at Jack Foster Media, and of course, keep it locked in over at Rocket Top Insider on all social media channels and over at rockettopinsider.com. That's going to wrap it up for this baseball and basketball episode of the Rocket Top Insider Press Pass. Until next time, peace.